the city overall.
Excellent. And we didn't report on measurements about stress and depression and other mental health challenges. There's some challenges in measuring those and in HIPAA privacy laws for employees, but we do know that there's a obviously city employees have been very stressed out with the recession and the increased workload, and that impacts productivity and ability to be at work. And so that the whole purpose of this presentation, people at home may be wondering, why are we spending money on, why are we spending taxpayer money and time on this? It's because the taxpayers pay for the health care of city employees. So not only do we care about our city employees and want them to be healthy and productive and at work, but also we want to decrease the amount of impact to taxpayers for paying for health care. So we're trying to get ahead of the game in this aspect to provide more choices for how people can get help.
Exactly. And targeting stress and depression this year too, because we've made some significant improvements in participation and in how the plan offers benefits. But that is something through the EAP program enhancements and the additional educational opportunities we'll be able to provide this year that we can really take some time to improve that area. What can you do? Your support is critical to this program, and ongoing attention and action from council to employees is necessary to improve employee health and reduce cost. Participate in the programs and the plan offerings. The city core plan has remained under national healthcare trends for 6 of the last 7 plan years. In the 2010 plan year, will be under projected costs, and for 11-12, those plan costs will increase just by about 1%.
And that is a tribute both to the wellness program and to the Labor Management Benefit Committee, who have been very diligent about looking at costs and program offerings to minimize the costs.
We need to set expectations for bureau managers and encourage your bureaus to participate in wellness activities and programs.
And that is really crucial. That's why we're in the previous slide, we're targeting managers and supervisors in some of our outreach efforts, that it's support for both from colleagues and from supervisors that makes people participate. Like when I grabbed the mayor in the hallway and enticed him to go get his blood work done.
Exactly.
It just takes some personal intervention, and we're going to hear in a little bit about how that's worked out in some of the bureaus.
Exactly.
I staged a personal intervention with Commissioner Leonard the other day, but I was not as successful as yours.
It didn't draw blood?
It
did draw
not
blood.
Very helpful, Mayor. Can I ask a question about nutrition?
Very yes. Helpful,
Mayor. And I apologize if you've already kind of covered this, but
no,
when I got my recent annual checkup, I learned that from my doctor that I should go see a nutritionist. Now, frankly, it never occurred to me that I need to see a nutritionist, not because I'm a healthy eater, but it just never occurred to me to see a nutritionist. And so I'm going to make an appointment to go see someone, and apparently I may even be allergic to certain kinds of food, or I may, even at age 52, I may not really know what my system needs in terms of a healthy diet. So do we track those kinds of things in terms of the extent to which people seek assistance in learning about what a healthy diet is and kind of coaching around those areas?
You know what, we do, and we even provide you support within the City Corps plan to do that. One of the plan changes that were made to support that type of behavior change was to put in a $500 annual benefit for nutritional counseling or hospital-based weight loss programs. So it absolutely is something that is important and is accessible under the health plan.
Thanks for that, because actually now I'm reminded. I opted out because my wife's covered under PSU's healthcare plan. So what I get by opting out is a little bit of money set aside for uncompensated care.
Right. But, and so you could use your flexible spending account for the purchase of that type of service if it's not covered under your spouse's plan.
Or you could just quit eating Philadelphia cheese sandwiches for lunch.
Well, it's just interesting as we age. I never thought about what I ate. And my daughter, who's a product of Portland Public Schools, is disgusted by my eating habits because she's had lots of health classes, and so she doesn't if I ever veer towards fast food, she gives me a lecture. If I ever look at a cigar, I get a frown, you know, so all those things. And the reality is, I think for some of us, it's just not something we ever thought about, and yet what's more fundamental than figuring out, you know, what your system needs and breaking some bad habits that you may have had for a long time?
You know, Commissioner, that's why I think really and truly one of the biggest components to this program and the success of it is the employee engagement, is how we engage employees in selecting and making, you know, healthy choices about their health care. And the way we need to do that is through the support of resources to our wellness program. And so right now, we've done a lot with this program just within our existing resources and really just me making slight adjustments to my internal budget in order to provide the services and the programs and the benefits that you see here. What we did put into the budget was a full-time wellness position because, as Kathy said, a lot of our numbers are based on the fact that we need to engage more of our employees and we need to be able to provide more information and more activities to them. And so there's a lot of our employees that don't really, they haven't fully grasped all of the benefits that are available to them and, you know, how we can father that progression. And so I really believe that the strategic plan that you have is solid. The activities that we've done thus far is solid, and we will start to see better results. These are results that are measured over a period of time. But clearly, it is clear to me that without that strong component or being able to further engage our employees, our progress will be slow.
And we have our wonderful halftime employee, Nicole Guilfoy, here today. And I think I think we would see measurable results if we were able to give her the resources to act on wellness information sharing and encouragement full time.
Do you have any other additional questions? All right. I would like to, at this time, introduce Susan Barr and Carol Stahlke. They are members of the Citywide Wellness Committee and have a few words to share with you, and so I'll turn it over to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good presentation. Ms. Stahlke, welcome back.
I know I'm back.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see
Hi.
You guys.
Hello.
You can go ahead and say.
Well, I work for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. My name is Susan Barr, and we have really adopted a culture of wellness in our office, thanks to the Wellness Committee and our commissioner and our managers. They've been great in supporting it, and I want to tell you a little story about what we've done this year. We created the ONI Wellness Challenge in our safety committee. One of the biggest health challenges to our office is that we're desk workers and sit most of the day. Sitting is way worse for us than we realize. We found that out. If you have any interest in researching it, we've found a lot of research. There's a great article in the New York Times, April 14th. It's called, Is Sitting a Lethal Activity? And the answer is yes. And so we wanted to start moving, and anybody that's sitting for more than 6 hours a day, no matter how fit you are, you really need to do some research on this. It's really, really bad for your health. So out of that discussion, we created a 12-week competition involving exercise, nutrition, and stress reduction. We got everyone in ONI in on this, and we created four teams, and competition began. We made booklets to keep track of healthy behaviors, and the team with the most points would win the grand championship. There was a lot of debate when we created our categories. For instance, at one point, we got a point a day for not eating junk food. But is chocolate junk food? There was a huge controversy. The chocolate defenders presented research. It's healthy. It finally came to our commissioner to rule that only chocolate, 1 ounce, 60% cocoa or more, was allowed. Otherwise, you didn't get your junk food point for the day.
Is that Baker's chocolate?
No. Well, no. It's good, but it doesn't have a lot of sugar in it. Don't get me started on sugar.
No,
but anyway. Over the three-month period, many people made big changes in their behaviors. My cube mate joined the city gym. He goes all the time. I broke up with the city, our office candy jar. We're over. People that never worked together started bonding on lawn walks that we would take after work. We'd go across the Hawthorne Bridge. That would get us some points. At the end of the contest, we had a party, awarded gold medals, headbands.
Purchased from the dollar store.
Yeah, that was all dollar store. I was going to say our bureau champion got a WWF champion wrestling belt. It was a dollar store purchase. He got that for quitting smoking and losing a whole bunch of weight at the same time. This is significant. A party culminated in our efforts. We had a big group dance. Our commissioner participated, and Oni will have a video on our website soon with the whole story of our wonderful challenge. And we were so pleased with that challenge that we're going to do an Oni Amazing Race this spring. We hope to keep the wellness momentum going, and we wouldn't have been able to do it if we wouldn't have gotten such great support from our director and our commissioner and everybody. Everybody's in on this in our office, and we're a little bureau, but we've really changed our culture. This is something we discuss all the time, you know, and it's changed people. People have really gotten healthier. So
thank you for your leadership, Susan.
Oh, thank you.
That's great. I like your enthusiasm, too.
Well, I'm a fanatic.
That's awesome, Susan. Before Susan, it was a couple years ago, she said, if this doesn't work this year, I'm quitting. I think it worked last year.
Well, people run when they see me coming in the halls, but yeah.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, my name is Carol Salke. I work for the safety department at the Portland Water Bureau. I've been involved with the Wellness Committee for about 5 years now, previously as president of AFSCME Local 189 and now as the safety department. I know our numbers weren't great last year, you know, as Kathy went through the presentation, but I do see improvement. I see improvement everywhere I go. At Interstate, we do stretching in the morning and at noon, all on our own time, our breaks and lunches. I noticed people walk on their breaks and lunches consistently, where before I would say they didn't walk as consistently. We have Zumba classes Wednesday at 1 o'clock, led
you
by
do
a
Zumba?
Coworker. I have Zumba today at 1 o'clock. So,
can you show us how it's done?
Do you want me to?
Yeah,
I can. There's just a couple of steps. There's a.
OMG.
Cool.
Wow. With the pan the picture here appropriately.
Carla, cue the music, please.
Yes. Carla, yeah. Ready?
The creator of Zumba is from Colombia. And so there's these movements where you start out like this, and then you go to the left. And I can't believe I'm doing this. But
you're good.
Yeah, well, that's
very
not
nice. Thank you, everybody.
Yes.
All testifiers today have to do some dance.
Thank you, Sam. So as you burn a lot of calories, and it's a great, fun dance.
So is that aerobic? Is
dance.
That the idea, aerobic?
The aerobic, yeah. Aerobic, it gets faster, and then
you
jump forward, and you jump back. And
looks fun.
Yeah. It's like to the Beetlejuice music. You remember when
they get
possessed and dance around the table?
What's his name? The singer. The Beetlejuice music.
The singer of the song?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember. She said it the other day.
Oh, sure.
Your memory would be better if you exercised.
The culture of wellness.
Because you use your whole brain when you're using all of your lungs. So if you breathe deep, you're thinking all the time.
Does David Schaff participate in Zumba?
No, I haven't seen David at class yet.
Maybe we'll make a note.
But we'll have to plug the Portland building class for David. So I just want to let you know that I know that the numbers will get better, and it's not really showing. You know, we have people that are coming to us trying to find primary care physicians that I've never had been asked that question before. Huh? And that's huge. And they're making better decisions and better choices about what they eat. And I know I was here last year and I joked about that I saw people eating more apples and bananas, but it's better than that this year. It's different. And they're asking about antioxidants. And Nicole Guilfoy has been a huge, huge resource for us that, I mean, she gives us pamphlets on how to order food when we go out and, you know, what not to order, what to order. And the guys are picking up on that. The guys being the crews at the Water Bureau, your industrial athletes is what the phrase is in the nation. Do we have 3 minutes? Or it's not like that today?
No, it's not like that.
I just want to plug Nicole and I went to a private company called Skanska because they've had a stretching program for 10 years where the foreman leads the crews in quick 7 minutes of stretching. But these simple movements avoid the injury and, you know, prevent surgeries. Or we've had some guys get hurt this year that I think really could have been avoided. But I won't go there. Anyway, we have a video. So we're going to be rolling out stretching to the crews. And they're already rolled out their stretching program at PBOT, B-O-M. I saw that on the report. But we are also doing it interstate. And we've been working on it for a while. And I think because it's been a grassroots effort on all of our part, that I think they'll take to it just fine. I think, did I cover everything you guys took?
So I consulted with my music advisor, and the singer of the Beetlejuice song is Harry Belafonte.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Very good.
Cool.
Well, Carrie, you also have been a wonderful wellness champion over many years, and I really appreciate you being here today and all of your work on the committee.
Yeah, thank you. I know with continued support, again, and encouragement to the employees, we'll be able to increase participation and get people healthier.
Carol, could how do other bureaus get a copy of the video?
So if we, contact
I'd
Nicole
love to I'd love to see the video you've done. And also to my colleagues, I don't, you know, Carol wears a lot of hats, and I don't know that we've ever had the occasion to thank her for another hat she wore so well in the past, which was as the president of the local union that represents so many of our employees. And I don't know how you balanced all those roles, but I will just tell you, as one commissioner, it was a pleasure to work with you when you were the president.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Nick.
Appreciate that. And you're so healthy. I move acceptance of the report. It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Thank you.
Fish.
Well, again, first of all, thank you for the report. Commissioner Fritz, RN, thank you for elevating this issue to really a council priority. And it takes a champion on the council to raise the visibility. And, you know, I'm probably a typical city employee in some respects, in that there are things that I'm learning as I age that I should be more attentive to. All of us who work for the city have stressful jobs. Whether you sit up here or whether you're a line worker for the Water Bureau, your work is stressful and involves lots of challenges. And I think the thing we often tend to forget is to take care of ourselves. And some of us, quite honestly, I mean, I'll speak personally, I'm still learning about better ways of taking care of myself. And so the wellness programs really serve a very practical benefit in helping us figure out how to age more gracefully, how to be more productive on work, and ultimately maybe how we save money on unnecessary healthcare interventions that are the result of not taking care of those needs. One area that the Parks Bureau is very interested in continued collaboration is this idea of having healthy food available to people. And in our second year of experimenting here, what we've learned is that if we put healthy food, fruit juices with low sugar, vitamin water, snack bars and other things for the junk, because we serve a largely captive audience, people will buy it just like they used to buy the junk because it's a convenience. And so why shouldn't we be doing that? And frankly, I will say that partly I think because of the shifting cultural attitudes about this, I don't know that we've had a single complaint that's ever come to my attention from kicking out all the junk food in our rec centers. Not all of it. You can still get a Slurpee in some places, and you can still get you'll still be able to get a high sugar soda until certain contracts expire. But by and large, there's an option for something healthier. And it seems to me that this is catching on and people are paying attention to these things, whereas maybe once upon a time it didn't get that level. So it requires a council champion, and I appreciate that Commissioner Fritz's professional work before she came here informs her work as a colleague and commissioner. And I thank each of you for your work. And as the commissioner in charge of two bureaus with probably 700-800 employees total, I mean, we want to know how we can partner more with what you're doing. So thank you all. Aye.
Leonard?
I too appreciate the focus and passion Commissioner Fritz brings to this effort, because I agree with Commissioner Fish, that's what is required. And I remember reading a couple of years ago that if a person were just to take fructose enhanced drinks and sugar enhanced drinks out of their diet, just quit drinking Coke, for an example, which is what I did, you could lose up to 20 pounds if you did nothing different by just not doing that. I just found that not only shocking, but helpful for me and my own goals that I set for myself. And so it's oftentimes, my experience has been, if you're really busy and you don't have a lot to do, it isn't what you need to do to stay healthy. You can actually just stop doing some things. You could actually passively, somewhat passively improve your health by just not doing certain things. Like Commissioner Fish mentioned fast foods and whatnot, not, you know, just being conscious about that. And when you eat something, just being careful what that is that you eat without necessarily dedicating a lot of time to an exercise program or something that requires a lot of effort. So it sounds like all of those strategies are being employed in this program, and I very much support it and appreciate it.
Fritz. Well, thank you, colleagues, for your support, because it does take leadership from the top as well as from the folks in the bureaus, and thank you again for being here today. To repeat, large claims are down $1.8 million less than they were at the same point last year, which is a great improvement, and our plan increases 1%, which is much less than most healthcare costs are increasing. So thank you to the benefits staff, to the Labor Management Benefit Committee, particularly Mark Bellow, the retiring president of COPIA, who was a wellness champion and really brought to my attention the need for this. Thank you, Kathy Bless and Yvonne Deckard, who you and I have shown that you can work across bureaus with a different commissioner and get things done throughout all of the bureaus. And this actually sets a good precedent for our work with the Equity Office, which, again, I'll be working with the mayor on, and that it does need equity also, like wellness, needs to be something that every single employee embraces and works on. I want to also thank Sarah Hussein in my office, who staffs the Wellness Committee for me and has been herself a wellness champion in our office, getting me to wear my pedometer. It's very good to work with all of you, and I appreciate the members of the Wellness Committee who are here today and all of the good work. We need to do better, though. There's no two ways about it, both for the health of our employees and for saving the taxpayers' money. So let's all listen better. We'll do. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank again, as with item 395, to Commissioner Amanda Fritz in helping to take our efforts to the next level, and appreciate your leadership on this. Thanks to the team, Kathy and Yvonne, and the Bureau folks as well. This is really important. It also can be a lot of fun. So onward. Aye. We could have done the consent, but we can't. Unless there are objections, I'll have Carla read the title, but unless there are objections, 413 will go back to my office.
413, allow consumption of alcohol in the public right-of-way, provided a permit for a community event street closure, alcohol allowed, is issued under Chapter 17.44.
Referred back to the mayor's office. Can you please read the title for procurement report, item number 414?
Accept bid of West Tech Construction, Inc. for the Northeast Sandy Boulevard, Northeast 47th Avenue to Northeast 82nd Avenue street improvements for $4,560,427.
Ms. Moody, hi.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Good. Thank you. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. You have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award to West Tech Construction in the amount of $4,560,427.40. The city identified 12 divisions of work for potential minority, women, and emerging small business subcontracting opportunities. Subcontracting participation on this project at bid time was 5.8%. Since then, West Tech has worked with us on finding additional opportunities for MWSB firms in grinding, sign and handrails, trucking, and flagging work, bringing the MWSB subcontracting participation level up to 12% on this project. So I'll turn this back over to council if there are any questions regarding the bidding process.
A discussion from council. Does anyone wish to testify on procurement report item number 414? I move acceptance of the procurement report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I very much appreciate Christine Moody's work in not accepting 5.8% minority women emerging small businesses participation and doubling it in between the time that this was filed and now. It just goes to show that with a little extra coaching encouragement, we can do better, and we have. Thank you very much. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. We'll now consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Hearing none, Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 415?
Adopt findings, authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process to the procurement services pursuant to ORS 279C and PCC 5.34, and provide payment for construction of the Interstate Maintenance Facility renovation project.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
I turn over to Mike Stewart, Chief Engineer for the Portland Water Group and Acting Director.
Do you want me to start?
Yes. I'll let Christine start, although I have to say, I'm not sure how we're going to follow Boom Boom, Belafonte, Boot Camp, and Carol's Jazzercise routine. I don't know
that
how
video,
we're going to do that.
That video is going to go viral.
Okay, Christine Moody, Procurement Services. The ordinance you have before you asks for an exemption to the traditional low bid process using an RFP process to select a general manager, construction manager general contractor for the interstate maintenance facility renovation. This project involves technical complexities in building construction in areas of confined space, project phasing, and scheduling in order to allow demolition and construction activities to be performed while continuing daily water systems operations. Procurement Services and Portland Water Bureau will conduct a competitive RFP process to select the CMGC. Using this process will result in substantial cost savings to the public because the CMGC will participate in value engineering and constructability reviews and will help with the development of a construction phasing plan and a well-coordinated project schedule. The engineer's estimate for construction is $40 million and includes costs for pre-construction services, construction, and contingency. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mike for project background.
A little bit of background. I've worked for the Water Bureau for 8 years, I guess, and that makes me a very young person in the life of folks in the Water Bureau. And in those 8 years, I have basically sat in the maintenance building with a leak over my head. And I think at the time I showed that leak to Commissioner Leonard when he became in charge of the Water Bureau, Mayor Potter, perhaps Mayor Adams, and Commissioner Francisconi when he dropped by one day. The building was built in the late 1920s as a garage. And it is probably a very good 1920s garage. It is not a very good 2011 operational facility. Besides serious roof problem, it is totally inadequate from a seismic point of view. And at any one time during the day, there can be upwards of 150 people working in that building. It's also immediately adjacent to what we call the operations building, which houses our lab and all of its sensitive lab equipment, and also the water control center, which is all of our computer hookups and T1 lines. In an earthquake, I would expect that this probably doesn't sound terribly scientific, but you would have a million tons or so of old buildings slapping, literally banging back and forth on the current operations building. We desperately need to replace that building, both for our employees' sake and to protect what's in that. An awful lot of key equipment that we would use in responding to a disaster, never mind daily business, is stored inside that building. The job itself is going to be very complex because it's an operational facility. We have to keep that facility operating while we do our construction. That's one, I'm not going to try and go through all of the findings that are in there, but one of the major reasons of having a CMGC is to be able to work very closely with a contractor and the designer so that we can schedule all of the construction activities and make sure we can at the same time keep our building open. So it's really important to the Water Bureau. I believe that having a CMGC will save money in many ways. Procurement process, there's less process to go through, less chance for protests and so on. Our bidding climate right now is excellent. Having the contractor and the designer work hand in hand to both sequence the construction and get the facilities designed and built in a way should greatly reduce claims. I think that's a proven benefit of CMGC. So it's extremely important. It also gives us another advantage that's very important, and that is discharging our GFE, MWBE, ESB obligations.
GFE?
Good faith effort.
And then say what the other...
Hmm?
Say what all the rest is, too, because people...
Minority,
women-owned business and emerging small business requirements. Right now, we have 62% of our subcontracted dollars devoted to that category of businesses. In what we're going to do in this procurement is something that we started off doing kind of on Christine's idea on PALBUTE 2, and that's writing into the supplemental provisions on PALBUTE 2, basically requiring the contractors to submit a plan, telling them what the aspirational goal was, outlining the approach and methodology for finding subcontracting opportunities, how they're going to have to tell us how they're going to do outreach, what kinds of mentoring and technical activities that they will do, any financial assistance they may provide, and so on. And so I think we'll have a very good chance of getting really good participation from those business categories. The aspirational goal for that on the job as a whole is going to be 35%. And I think that our ability to work with the contractor to require them to have someone with experience to be in charge of that effort, and that's not uncommon in large contractors who are used to doing federal procurements where they have a very large small business program. They have staff on their firms who are used to coordinating these kind of activities and understand what must be done and how to go about it.
Could you clarify, you or Christine, whether when you say 35% as the goal, as the aspirational goal, are you referring to dollars or contracts?
We're referring to dollars of subcontracts. So the city's aspirational goal is 35% of subcontracting would go to MWSBs.
And that's dollars?
That's in dollars.
Measured by dollars?
Yes.
Okay.
And what we've managed to accomplish so far, which is in a way just on the PTE portion of this, is 62% of subcontracted dollars. We're doing really very well, and we expect to continue that performance. I think that's about all I have to say. Not as exciting as Jazzercise, but the best we can do.
You could dance for us.
Cowboys don't do that. Now I wish I hadn't brought it up.
Ms. Moody, anything to add?
No, I don't have anything to add.
Questions from council?
There's a committee that looks at the request for proposals.
Yes, ma'am.
Does that include a minority evaluator?
Yes, ma'am.
Will it have some women on it?
Probably. I can't
like
say
yes
until
ma'am on that one.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
It will.
Is this the only time this comes to council? Are we voting also on the $50 million maximum expenditure?
This is the RFP, and when we let the contract, we'll have to come back.
So that...
And I'm expecting that we will do... Right now, the confidence estimate by definition on this one is low. But I'm expecting that we will do very well in this climate.
But low only in the sense is that you...
That we don't have a firm estimate.
We don't have a firm estimate, but our experience has been, especially of late, that the actual prices are coming in...
We're getting...
Lower than what we estimate.
Extremely good results in this bidding climate.
So we're hoping for less than $50 million.
Yes, ma'am.
And I appreciate you coming to brief me ahead of time on this project. I know it's been a long time in the making, and also that our employees are working in very difficult conditions right now. It needs to be done. Some of my questions here are for the benefit of the viewing audience. Did we consider building elsewhere so that we wouldn't have to juggle the using the site at the same time as building?
A long, long time ago, we looked into that, and... The costs are prohibitive. We own the property that we're on right now, and it's about 11 or 12 acres. I forget exactly what the acreage was. When you have to go out and buy real estate, it's really a problem. And finding both a vacant piece of property that's big enough, that's semi-centrally located, is almost impossible to do. We would have ended up both spending the money and probably finding ourselves way out on the edge somewhere of the metropolitan area.
And I would also like to add that when Mike and I, after he was appointed chief engineer, first began discussing this project, I actually was very focused on splitting up the operations into four quadrants around the city. So I asked them, and actually went with Water Bureau people to identify pieces of property, some of which we own, some of which we don't, so that we could have a decentralized but closer to the neighborhoods they serve, water services teams in the four quadrants of Portland. And I actually wanted to have that happen, but became convinced because of the costs and the duplication then of the various efforts that it was just not realistic, although it would have provided a better service and quicker service throughout Portland when we have breaks and those kinds of things in mains. It just was not feasible financially.
Right, and I'm glad you said that, because this has been in the planning for a long time, and you have looked at other options, and I want
Many.
People to know that. So my last question is there any way to spread out the cost over a different period of time so that we're not putting up the money for that at the same time as we're doing all the other things that we have to do?
I don't know how we would effectively do that, because if we start construction, we're better off getting out of the way, because it's an operational facility, and if you tried to spread the construction out, it would become a whole other thing to think about how we could effectively move in and out of facilities and keep them operating while we spread the cost for the facility. So I think that would be very difficult.
I would also point out the other dynamic that we're working within right now, as we alluded to earlier, is we're getting historically low bids back on major projects. I don't know if you yet, Mike, you are wanting to reveal the bid on the Powell 2.
We haven't signed off on it yet, so I'd rather not, but I'll tell you, we got a very, very good bid.
Much
and,
below.
And I also don't expect any trouble from the contractor. Sometimes when you get really low bids, you're setting yourself up for disputes and so on. I think we got a very competitive bid. But
that's consistent with what's
yes.
been happening. And two, the bonds that we have to issue to pay for those projects are at historic low interest rates. So while we shouldn't maybe pile up projects because of the state of the economy and because of the impact on rates, certainly projects that are scheduled, this is a good time to do them.
I realize this is somewhat of a double-edged sword, but we do two things by this. We both get very good pricing for the ratepayers and the citizens in getting a lot of work done, but it also provides a lot of jobs. The Powell Butte job, that's going to have a lot of people involved in it, because it's what it takes to lay rebar. So it's not just 10 guys on earth movers. It's a whole bunch of work. Building this industrial, part office building employs lots of people. You've got people hanging wallboard and electricians and all the trades that go into building a building like this. So we help the economy also at the same time.
That is a really good point, and I think ongoing, if you can give us an estimate of the number of jobs in a particular project, when you see a number like 50 million, you're wondering whether it's all going in one bucket, and in fact,
well,
it's
we can
not.
Do that. It's yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and my final question is, how long have we been planning to do this, and so where in the budget has the water has this been in the Water Bureau's budget over several years, and how much longer will it be?
I can say for certain it's been there the 8 years that I've been here, and I don't know how much before that maybe.
And that's a good answer. At least 8 years.
At least 8 years, yeah. For sure.
So we've been putting money in for the
planning. We've been trying to start the project, yes, ma'am.
And now it'll be in next year's, and how many years out will it be in the budget to pay for it?
I think it takes 2 years once we start construction to finish, roughly.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anyone wish to? It's a non-emergency ordinance. So unless does anyone wish to testify on this matter? It moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance? I assume item number 416.
Create a new non-represented classification of senior affirmative action diversity analyst and establish a compensation rate for this classification.
So are there any questions? We held this over so that we could work out some details with Commissioner Fritz.
We've been in contact with her office. We believe we've resolved all the questions.
Thanks. Unless there's discussion with council regarding 416, or if there's anyone in the room that wishes to testify, then Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you to David Reese and to Yvonne Deckert and to the mayor for delaying this so that we could get our questions answered. I'm satisfied that this is a good thing to do. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 417?
Authorize the Portland Housing Bureau to purchase properties through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Dollar Homes Program and enter into agreement to transfer acquired properties to a community land trust nonprofit housing partner for rehabilitation and to increase the stock of permanently affordable homes housing.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Andrea Mathiason is here to answer any questions that you may have, but she's also prepared a script for me to read, which I hope anticipates all of your questions. One of the home ownership goals of the Portland Housing Bureau is to increase the number of home ownership opportunities available to low-income households of color. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is now offering local governments the opportunity to purchase HUD-owned foreclosed properties for $1 plus closing costs under the Dollar Homes Program. That's $1.
That's a good deal.
We referenced earlier today to buying things at the dollar store. Now we're being competitive with you, Commissioner Fritz. This is $1 plus closing costs. In an effort to support city home ownership goals, the Portland Housing Bureau desires to purchase properties available under this new HUD program and to work with Portland's local land trust, Proud Ground, to transition the acquired properties into permanently affordable home ownership opportunities. And as you will recall, Proud Ground, headed by Jesse Beeson, has never had a foreclosure in all of the properties that they have acquired and sold. Approximately 4 single-family homes are currently available under this program for acquisition by the City of Portland, and HUD anticipates an additional home per month will also be available for acquisition. Today's resolution authorizes the Portland Housing Bureau to acquire available properties and transition them to Proud Ground, increasing the number of affordable home ownership units at a very low cost to the city. The estimated cost per unit for acquisition, which I guess includes the closing cost, is $4,000, which we have budgeted. Proud Ground is lining up financing to address any repair needs before making individual properties available to eligible low-income home buyers. I want to thank Roy Scholl from the HUD Portland Field Office, John Gale and Carl Dinkelspiel from the Portland Housing Bureau, Jesse Beeson and Steve Whitson from Proud Ground, and Andrea is here to answer any questions you may have, colleagues.
Wow, a dollar. That's amazing.
You've asked us to be frugal, Mayor.
Well, let's see, how many can we buy? All right, any questions from council? All right. Anyone wish to testify on emergency ordinance item number 417? Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish?
Well, thanks to our friends at HUD. These are tough times. We expect to take some significant cuts this year in CDBG and home monies. But, you know, one bright spot in a down housing market is that there are more affordable homes for first-time homeowners generally with the compression in prices. And then there are homes that have slipped through foreclosure and otherwise available. And our job is to put families into those homes as soon as possible so that we can stabilize communities that have been hammered by this recession. So, Andrea, thanks for joining us today and all your good work. Aye.
Leonard.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for bringing this fabulous program to the council. It's excellent. Thank you. Aye.
Ricketts.
Thank you for your work on this. And it is, a double-edged sword that this means that some family has lost their home through foreclosure. And I hope that program will work with those families, perhaps in helping them get back on their feet. And
the bulk of the properties that we're talking about are actually vacant. And so they've been foreclosed for quite some time, which is why they've ended up in the Dollar Homes program.
Thank you for that explanation. So this is, opportunistic and putting the properties into public ownership and then transferring to proud ground so that they remain affordable, and it's obviously a great program. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Thank you, Proud Ground. Aye. So approved. We're in recess till
about 4:13. Did I miss that?
Did I miss 4:13?
No. It's pulled back to the office.
I'm sorry?
I pulled it back.
Oh.
We're in recess till tomorrow at 2 p.m.
But it's still working with it.
Okay.
You saw some things on that too.
I did.
Yeah.